Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for allowing me to appear here today.
Could you state your name for the record?
My name is Thomas Ross, R-O-S-S. I am a family practice physician working with Planned Parenthood of the Heartland for 15 years, providing comprehensive care for men, women, and children. As part of my duties, I have provided abortion services throughout that time and am extremely proud to have done so working with Planned Parenthood. I have brief comments, and then I will try my best to answer any questions that you may have.
Dr. Ross, are your comments to the rule?
I believe so, yes, very specifically to the rule.
Thank you.
Safety of my patients is my number one priority. I only use procedures in my practice that I trust to be safe. The exact same medical procedures and protocols are used when telemedicine services are utilized providing medical abortion. The patient receives the same high-quality medical care. The only difference is that I'm not physically handing the patient a pill. I am dispensing this through telemedicine technology. Medical science has proven this is a safe method to deliver health services. As a doctor, I know firsthand the current standard of care, as it has been refined over the years, is appropriate and safe. No scientific factual evidence has been presented to discredit our delivery system. The petition that proposes these rules provides only misleading statistics about adverse events and reactions to the medicines that are used for medication abortion. The petition does not give context of the statistics. Nationally, as of April 2011, approximately 1.52 million women had used this medication, while only 2,207 had experienced an adverse event. This rate of adverse event is far less than for other common medications prescribed for asthma, high cholesterol, arthritis, and even some of the popular over-the-counter medications. Additionally, some of the adverse events following a medication abortion were not related to the medication itself. A significant number of adverse events, often cited, are related to an older protocol that utilized different administration methods and different doses. The modern evidence-based protocol used by Planned Parenthood and other providers today has been shown to be even safer and more effective. I would just make reference to the board in 2010, who investigated for over a year. During that time, we provided hundreds of documents to the board and fully complied with in-person visits and audits. I appeared before the board in a meeting where we described the program to the board at length. After those meetings in December 2010, the board dismissed the complaint and took no action. The board appeared satisfied with our program and confident in the safety and appropriateness of our protocols as they felt the need to proceed with any action. In closing, please let me say, in the time since the last investigation, absolutely nothing has changed with how we provide medication abortions through telemedicine. The exact same procedures and protocols are used. I was confident in the system then. I am confident in the system now. As a physician, I would not and I could not put my patients in a dangerous situation. Thank you.
Dr. Ross, you were brought up to describe the process of what happens. So say a patient walks in the door, if you would walk me through exactly what happens, what medicines are administered, and what the patient is told to do afterwards.
I have ample experience providing medication abortion services both face-to-face and also via telemedicine. The patient would have the same initial options counseling, education about her options for either a surgical procedure or the medication. She would have an ultrasound. She would have laboratory studies done. These might include a pregnancy test. They would include a check for anemia, what her hemoglobin or hematocrit would be. They would involve typing for Rh factor, that negative or positive part of the blood that is important when you're pregnant and potentially affects future pregnancies. If the patient were in clinic with me physically present, we do not routinely provide a physical exam. I do not have her disrobe. I do not perform a pelvic exam. We do encourage them to have STI screening at every encounter with us, but that would be available either telemedicine or in person. I would sit down with the patient in an in-person encounter, ask if she has any questions, briefly review, as redundant as it is, the education she's received already. It becomes, after so many years, something of a mantra for me, but the information that I provide to the patient is going to be the same whether it's done telemedicine or sitting face-to-face with her. Our 24-hour telephone number that is available to them, I encourage to call anytime. I verify that they have a follow-up appointment with us that is not different whether it is a face-to-face encounter or it is a telemedicine encounter. This could conclude a pregnancy test, a repeat ultrasound, other laboratory testing, repeat STI screening. Typically, we attempt to include this visit scheduled before she leaves the clinic for a follow-up within 2 weeks. In some cases, it is my best judgment, the follow-up should be even sooner than that. We make it very clear to her the importance of the follow-up visit, and in fact, we will make contact with the patient if they do not show up for their scheduled appointment and try to reschedule them, strongly encourage them to come back in. Again, it comes off sounding a bit like a cliche, but I have to assure you it is true from a person who has done many of these in both settings. The only difference in telemedicine, from my perspective, is that I do not physically pop a pill out of a foil pack into the palm of her hand. Instead, I unlock a drawer, watch her take the pill out, open it up from the bottle, and swallow it while I am observing her.
What does that first pill do?
Mifeprex, or misoprostol, is a progesterone blocker. It stops the pregnancy from growing. That pill is administered in the clinic and then is followed in 24, 48 hours, occasionally as long as 72 hours, by misoprostol, brand name Cytotec. This stimulates uterine contractions and actually causes the miscarriage experience. Misoprostol is used perhaps in every hospital that does deliveries in our state for cervical ripening and to bring on labor. It is a commonly used medicine for that purpose and has also been used for other anti-ulcer and similar such uses for GI conditions. But it's very effective for actually causing the emptying of the uterus. The timing of the medications and the dosage of the medications has changed over the years. Evidence refines what works best for us, and it's been critically important for any type of a practice today, but particularly one that's under the microscope as Planned Parenthood is, we must practice evidence-based medicine. The initial approval by the FDA, which interestingly enough Planned Parenthood of the Heartland was involved in, one of the clinics right here in Des Moines, the first to provide that service in the country when the FDA was acquiring additional data, has changed significantly in the medication that we provide and in the dosing. It's the same medicine, but at a different dose and in a different timing. Some of the problems that we're seeing, particularly with the self-administered medications, we simply have not seen with the current methods that we use. And I think that's important, that unfortunately it's evolved. But I don't see the difference between that and a couple other dozen medications that I've seen significantly evolve over time, or that you could say that I am prescribing off-label, not for an FDA-approved indication for it, but indeed for what is a standard of care for how that medication is administered. Practice of abortion care will continue to evolve. That's where telemedicine comes in. But I hope, and then I'll take follow-up question, I hope I've made clear that the service that I provide as a physician in a face-to-face account encounter, as opposed to a telemedicine one, is really identical, with the exception of how the patient receives the Mifeprex pill. Thank you.
So in the, I'm sorry for taking over here, but I had a lot of questions after he said the physical exam was unclear. So right now there is a physical exam, only it's not a pelvic exam. It's an ultrasound, lab work to verify pregnancy.
Vital signs, blood pressure, pulse, temperature.
Okay, and so if you were in person, you would do the exact same thing. And who's performing this now? Would it be a nurse or?
The specifically, could I address that? For the ultrasound, the laboratory studies, the taking of the vital signs, the collecting the history, and
is there one person, like a intake person or a nurse, who's performing that?
What we end up, and again over time I've found that has worked best for us and provides consistency, is we tend to break that up into units and have somebody doing it who has done a lot of it. So the person who is doing ultrasounds must be ultrasound certified, periodically monitored and recertified. I view all of those ultrasounds, they perform the exam with the machine, but I look at the sonograms. The laboratory study could be done by a nurse or by a certified medical technician who is trained in laboratory and who is periodically reviewed on those few simple labs that we do in the clinic. The education is done by an experienced educator, primarily an in-house training program, but they have to have been trained, observe someone else do a good number of those, and then be observed why they do it. And then I get a chance to visit with the patient and make sure that I'm satisfied with the education and the options counseling that they've received.
Okay. You said the first pill, it stops the baby from growing. Is it just like a stunt that stunts their growth, or what does it do?
Progesterone is integral to an evolving pregnancy, and the Mifeprex blocks progesterone being delivered to the fetus.
Okay, and then, and this is, here I'm veering off the rule, but I'm just curious, what is the cost for this? Like the average cost for this whole procedure?
That's an area that I'm not as knowledgeable about as someone else could be and could provide information for you. It's a fair question, but it's one that I don't want to misspeak to and give incorrect information. I will tell you that there is no, that the cost of the two procedures, whether done face-to-face with me or done by telemedicine, is the same for what we charge the patient. The difference, however, and this is significant, I'm afraid, is that in our wonderful state, there are still long distances to be traveled to a clinic at times. And the additional cost for her to travel to a clinic where she can meet face-to-face with a physician, there may be significant additional costs for her and time away from her children and other barriers for her.
Okay. Any questions from the committee? Senator Shelgren.
Thank you very much. A couple questions I have for you. First question, I guess, what is the maximum age of a fetus before, or, you know, to the point where the abortion-inducing drugs are no longer recommended or used?
This has varied around the world, but it is a standard of care in the U.S. that we will offer medication abortion through 8 weeks of gestation. Now, by medical convention in the U.S., we back up 2 weeks to the last menstrual period. So some people will talk about from the point of conception, which might be 2 weeks less. Others, typical in medicine, would be to use when we estimate the last menstrual period. So we would offer that through 8 weeks.
So 6 to 8 weeks, depends on how you do the calculations?
That's probably quite accurate, yes. By the time she realizes she's pregnant, has a pregnancy test, makes an appointment, comes in, typically these patients are in the 5 to 8 week range, yes, sir.
And then if there's after 8 weeks, what is the procedure?
Beyond 8 weeks, we would do a procedure. They would not be able to use the medication. Other countries do use the medication far longer, but there are significant additional potential complications involved with it used at a greater gestation. We believe firmly that the safest way to end that pregnancy for the woman is with a suction, dilation, and curettage, a D&C as it's commonly called. So, yes, she would be eligible only for a procedure, not for a medication-only abortion.
Then are these done by telemedicine also?
I think you know the answer to that, sir. No, obviously those are done hands-on. Although I will tell you that there is remote surgery being done, robotic surgery, all over the country. But to my knowledge, nothing like that for abortion services.
Is there currently, on the telemedicine side then, under this eight-week window, is there a requirement that a nurse be the one who gives the physical currently, or can that be done by anyone that is considered qualified, in your opinion?
It would have to be a staff person who has some type of medical certification, but it could be a certified medical assistant. It could be an LPN. It could be an RN.
Okay, so there's not a minimum threshold with regards to being a nurse specifically on this.
For taking the vital signs or for doing the blood work, specifically you're asking?
I'm just wondering if there's anything that's required at least to have a nurse do, so that we're not having someone who is a secretary that has been given a brief test to say, okay, well, you're good enough, and now the doctor's going to come in on the TV screen, and your secretary will handle everything. That's what I'm making sure, is that we have a medical professional that is of a minimum level in order to handle these issues.
I understand your concern. I think it's a good question. One, they would have to be a certified, and I'm not trying to use that as an excuse, but I'll come back to that as sort of being your base level. They would have to be certified. So it would be a CMA, an LPN, or an RN, to the best of my knowledge. We have folks who are trained in the clinic who do other services, but in these encounters with the patient, it would be someone who has a medical certification. And I have to say, it's exactly the same people doing that, whether I'm in the building or doing the telemedicine remotely.
And do you think that's a good idea? Is it a good idea that somebody who has more knowledge, and in this case is one of those types of nurses, doing that initial work, or do you think we should lower the standards?
I would not be in favor of lowering the standards, and I think there are actually laws in place, rules and regulations already, that would mandate that it have to be somebody who, for that piece of care that they're providing that day, whether it's being able to efficiently do a laboratory test or being able to perform an ultrasound, I think it's very important that they be certified and periodically rechecked on those skills. Yes, sir.
Thank you very much. Also, I noticed earlier when you were commenting that you said that you strongly encourage the follow-up with regards to after the medicine's been dispensed, the individual's taking the medicine, because based on my calculations, even a 1 in 600 rate of having a complication is well worth a follow-up meeting with the doctor, or in this case, a nurse, to make sure everything went well. So I'm assuming that Section 4 of this, which requires a 12 to 18-day follow-up appointment, you're supportive of.
I guess that would depend on the wording on that. Getting patients back into the clinics are hard for me to understand. I do male and female sterilizations as part of my clinical practice. I can't imagine my male patients going through a vasectomy and not bringing me back a semen sample to make sure they're good to go. Unfortunately, particularly in the early days, and Planned Parenthood helped me address this and really promote getting patients back in, dogging them, if you will, there is still a significant number of my patients who never come back after their vasectomy. I have the same concern about our abortion patients. So we schedule an appointment. We tell them how important it is to keep that appointment. That appointment can be offered at any of our clinics that are most convenient for them to get to at that time. They don't have to wait for the appointment to contact us because we have a 24-hour number that we urge them to call if there's a problem. And then we tell them pretty much right up front that if you don't show up, we're going to call you and kind of see how you're doing. But there are still patients who never come back after their initial visit, sir.
I totally understand that. I don't expect to control the patient's desires, but I do think it's a very important thing to make sure that that appointment is scheduled, so I appreciate that.
The way you say that, I agree with you completely. Yes, sir.
Thank you.
Senator Yocum?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Actually, Senator Chalgren asked one of my questions, and that was the length of time before medication abortion can be performed and when that's no longer a viable option. So my only other question then is, after listening to everything you have said in terms of the procedures, whether it's face-to-face or telemedicine, that everything is exactly the same except whether or not the physician's in the room to hand the woman the pill, or whether or not it's that two-way voice and visual communication called teleconferencing where you push a button, a drawer opens, and she takes the pill out of the drawer.
You
is
are
that
abs-
the only difference?
I truly believe that is the only difference. I can only absolutely 100% certainty speak to you on the days that I am providing abortions in the clinics. But yes, ma'am, I promise you that when I am doing those procedures, whether telemedicine or face-to-face, there is no different in the rest of the long components that are put together. It's simply whether she looks at my bald head on a TV monitor or she gets to see me in person for a few minutes. I spend an equal amount of time with her. Perhaps my bias has been initially a little more time when we were starting telemedicine. Now I would say an equal amount of time. But I think that as you can imagine, facial features and sometimes body gestures communicate as much as speech does. And so the ability to see her and take as much time as I need, so it does vary from one person to another. But I'm sorry, to come back to your question, yes, that is the only difference, I believe, at least when I am providing those services.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
I forgot to ask about the second medicine. So the second medicine, you said it starts contractions?
Cytotec, the brand name, or Misoprostol, the generic name, stimulates smooth muscle uterine contractions. And this literally causes the uterus to empty itself, to have, as I refer to it, the miscarriage experience. The problem is miscarriage is a lay term, and so it is an abortion. Whether it's induced or whether it's spontaneous, it is still an abortion. But that is the actual point where the uterine contents are emptied, where she will pass clots and tissue. And understand that since we are talking about less than 9 weeks through 8 weeks, we are talking about a tiny amount of tissue. The gestational sac that is the present at that time is about a half inch in diameter. That is the pregnancy, if you will. But there is the lining of the uterus, and there are some blood clots that she'll pass as well. And that typically happens within 4 to 6 hours after taking the misoprostol pills, the second medication, ma'am.
So not to go into too much feminine detail here, but is it like having a menstrual period, or heavier or less? What is it?
It is unique, which is something that I try to take a moment to make a point with my patients. And it will be different for each person, and even for the same person who's had more than one miscarriage for whatever reason. It will be different each time. There will be something unique about it. I would say yes. In general, the cramping and the bleeding is similar to the heaviest part of her period, but it can be even heavier and much more crampy briefly. And I think many women who've had a miscarriage experience, a spontaneous abortion, would say it was significantly more than simply having their periods, even if they have really rotten periods. But for others, they've actually been able to sleep through much of the experience. So there's tremendous variability from one patient to the next, or one experience to the next.
So some of these other telemedicines, though, don't really send people home to have a bleeding experience, do they? I mean, the ones that were listed weren't really involving blood. I have a psychiatrist friend that does some telemedicine, and I did ask him, and none of his medicines that he administers puts a person really in pain or with a blood flow, I guess is what. So
I wouldn't.
It's a little different. Do you admit that it is a little different?
I wouldn't speak to the psychiatry, although I know that it's being commonly done. I would say this again. Regardless of your merits overall of the use of medication abortion as a therapeutic option, you specifically said today, let's talk about in reference to telemedicine. Either way, she's going to go home, hold the misoprostol pills in her cheek 24 hours later, because it's been found best to wait at least 24 hours, 48 hours, really when it is a convenient time for her to be home and to take care of herself and not have to worry about others. That's when we tell her to utilize the second medication, the misoprostol. But that part of the abortion experience is going to be the same, ma'am, whether she...
I just have two more questions. You're talking about and this was one of my questions before you came up, too, gestational age. There seems to be a difference between gestational age and gestational period. Is that correct? Gestational period, is that from conception on? And then age is from your last menses, or is it opposite, or...
The terms,
what are they looking at when they say gestational age?
The terms are used interchangeably, unfortunately. But the standard, the convention in medicine, is to date from when the last menstrual period would have been. Typically, 2 weeks later, approximately, roughly, that conception occurred. So in our numbers, for instance, when we say that you must be less than 9 weeks through 8 weeks, to use the abortion medication method, we're talking about from their last menstrual period. If you were to look at their conception, conception, unfortunately, does not always occur mid-cycle. It can occur at any time, including even while you're menstruating. But typically, it occurs closer to mid-cycle than they would be 6 weeks. So we always have that issue of how we're describing the gestation of the pregnancy, how far along is that patient. But 6 weeks from conception would be the same as 8 weeks gestation as we would typically use it in medicine today in the U.S. I'm not sure if that helped or not. I'm sorry.
That was
I tried.
Good. I can't remember my other question, though. Senator Shogren.
Thank you very much. I'm sorry. I have two more quick questions for you because I'm trying to get us through this hopefully quickly. First question I have deals with the age of individuals that you've performed these procedures on. What is the youngest that one of your patients can be that's having one of these drug-induced abortions?
They are used for teenagers as well as adults. I would say, and that's a good question, I don't recall ever being asked that before, Senator. 12 or 13 years of age.
Okay. And the reason I'm asking that question is because we have these five chapters. One is just a definition, so I don't think anyone's arguing the definition of it. The last one deals with parental notification regarding pregnant minors. We already have code that dictates what we're supposed to do there.
Yes, sir.
So far, I've heard nobody complain about that part of this bill, and I'm okay with that. I think that's probably a good part of this bill. The next step we look at in here talks about the follow-up appointments, and I appreciate your words because this actually says the physician shall use all reasonable efforts to ensure that the woman is aware of the follow-up appointment and she returns for the appointment. It doesn't say you're required or anything else. It just says you have to make all reasonable efforts to get her back to her appointment. So I think we agree in this. I haven't heard anybody say anything against that part of it either. So I'm just trying to narrow down. The biggest challenge we seem to have, and that I've heard so far, is whether or not a physician should be dispensing this in person or over a screen. And then whether or not, and the next one comes up, which is whether or not a physician should be required to be given the physical. Those seem to be the only two issues we're dealing with here. And I just want to make sure that the more we can narrow this discussion down, I think the better off we're going to be as far as time concerns.
But it appears important in those differences that you pointed out because it basically is not a quantitative, it's a qualitative issue. It is a yes or no issue. The bill, as I see it, would effectively bar telemedicine abortions in Iowa. I don't see wiggle room on that. On that, sir. Those are the points that you, I think, did a good job of illustrating that really address those. They would prevent that. So it's not a matter of refining, which I think refining our medical care is a good thing, and I hope I keep doing it as long as I'm practicing. I can always get better. This rule, as I understand it, would stop telemedicine abortion.
That's correct. You know, you said earlier that this bill, and I wish this was a bill, I wish we were having a full
discussion
on this. I spoke
incorrectly, didn't I?
That's okay, but this is a rule, and I just want to make sure that this rule comports to what the legislation on the books says, and that's one of my major goals with this. But thank you very much for answering the questions. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Doctor, can you just tell me how many years have telemedicine abortion been going on in Iowa?
We started providing that service in 2008, I cannot tell you when it was.
So about 4 years.
5 years.
Can you, in your opinion, this is the only question I have, in your opinion, what's changed that the Board of Medicine would want to change? What's changed in that length of time? What is different now than it was a year ago?
The membership, the makeup of the board.
Thank you.
That is the only thing that I can see that has made a difference.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, Madam Chair.
I'm sorry. I know you asked me to limit my comments, ma'am. That's the only one. That's the only one that I'll make.
I asked
you specifically.
That's fine.
Just to try to go back to what Senator Shogren said, you are fine with the parental notification part.
Ma'am, that is already law. And we have not found that we've had to change how we do that for the telemedicine. It is an absolute thing that there is no wiggle room, and we insist on 100% compliance from all of our staff. That law, I believe, I'm sorry, I'm not as legally knowledgeable. I believe that is a law, is it not? That law is in place and equally applies to telemedicine, and there are no exceptions to that at Planned Parenthood.
Okay. All right. Thank you.